Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
In 1953, pioneering journalist Anne Scott James started to write a weekly column for the Sunday Express newspaper, which then had a circulation of nearly 4 million. The Anne Scott James page set the bar for a new way of writing. She perfected the art of the short, sharp column, and many of the topics she covered are equally relevant today. Here to tell me more about the fascinating and groundbreaking life of Anne Scott Thomas, and it's the subject of a new book called Hold the Front Page, is her daughter, Claire Hastings. Good morning to you, Claire.
Good morning, Giles.
Lovely to have you with us on this interesting Monday.
Yes, very interesting Monday.
You just said to me off air that, in fact, I'm the highlight of your day, so therefore...
You are the highlight of my day. I was just saying everything else that I'm doing to promote this book and promote Dear Anne is now being cancelled because of the awful coronavirus, so you are definitely my highlight.
Well, we aim to please. Now, Richard Ingrams has said beautifully, Anne, who I knew as a country neighbour, was a beautiful and formidable woman, a pioneer in the male-dominated world of Fleet Street, whose newspaper columns reprinted in the book are still relevant and topical today. And she said that Claire gives us a touching memoir of her remarkable mother, like herself, strong on common sense and short on whinging. Explain, Claire, what was it like growing up then with a truly remarkable woman, and what was the setting that she started writing in 1953?
Well, growing up with her, I was mostly brought up by others, it must be said, because my mother at that time was very much concentrating on her career, and she did need to. I mean, she was a pioneer at this point. There were very few women in journalism, very few women on Fleet Street, and she'd started off, I mean, she was she came from a writing family. Her father was the lead writer in her childhood for the Daily Chronicle, and then literary editor for the Daily News, and her mother wrote a weekly letter for the Yorkshire Post. So she had started off with sort of understanding that people could write for a living. But and she went to Somerville College, Oxford, which again was very unusual early on. Women didn't go, and she'd expected, I think, a life of freedom and joy, but actually she got one of rather confined, with men far from welcoming them into the midst, rather looked down on the women, I think, at university.
So whose idea was it? How did she get, if you like, her first big break then into journalism in 1953?
Well, she started off, her first big break was, she started off in 1933, in fact. It really was a lifetime in print, and she applied and got a job writing for a little-known craft magazine called Weldon's, answering readers' letters. And she went on then to work on Vogue, doing knitting pattern. She was a knitting pattern editor for a time, before going on to move to the editorial department. So she started off, I suppose you could say, quite a classic route to women in journalism, working in rather girly and female areas. And I think it was the war and Picture Post in 1940 that really kind of propelled her into a much more serious form of journalism, as she was their woman's editor during the war.
So what was it, who commissioned then the Anne Scott James page then? Who was her commissioning editor?
She was, in fact, asked to write by Harold Keeble, who was the then editor, to do a piece on Queen Mary, who died. And she wrote this one-off piece, and it was very successful. Readers wrote in and showed interest in her. And he then rather went off piece and asked her if she would come and do a whole page every week called the Anne Scott James page. And it was to appeal to the female reader. And as you said earlier on, it's very easy to forget that newspapers were the order of the day, that 4 million people would read a newspaper every week. I mean, this is unheard of now. I mean, newspaper editors would kind of cheer and rave if they thought that was the way forward. And it was an aspirational career. And so she was very lucky to get this job with a whole page called after her. I mean, no female journalist had ever had a page with their name at the top.
And it was, I mean, again, dealing with women's issues, this was revolutionary. And I like to say the thing that you start the book off with by saying is that A, that anybody in your family given a blank page will fill it, but also that that journalism was not a dirty word in the.
It was not a dirty word, Giles. You'll be pleased to hear that they were welcomed and cheered. The paparazzi had yet to be invented, and Fleet Street, you know, the papers, there was the Mail, the Express, the Times, the Jewish Chronicle, everything was next door to each other. So to get onto the paving stones of Fleet Street was an aura of romance and excitement as all the publications jostled together. When you met, every time you left the office, you'd see friends and rivals, you'd have opposite pubs you'd go to. It was a very exciting place to be. It was the golden age of newspapers.
And I mean, if they were expecting a sort of mumsy type of writing about domestics and home cooking and whatever,
well, bad luck for them,
thank
I would
you.
Say.
Because she had
she tackled everything she wrote in the same way. Whether it was fashion, politics, interviews, it was written in a very brisk and very informative style and very ironical. And she was of a school of writing that would never use 100 words if 50 would do. She just knew how to really write very quick, short pieces that very much appealed to the readers. And it started off being very female, but then I think she did start to cross the male-female divide, so that everybody started to read her pieces.
And I mean, she may have been a groundbreaker. This is the 50s, I mean, when, you know, women were supposed
I know, it is the 50s. I mean, women were not in journalism, they weren't writers, they weren't expected particularly to have any kind of opinions on much about things and fluffy bunnies. So she did, and I think actually the thing that made her writing very important, I have to say that she thought the reader was central. She wasn't going to write pieces just about herself or things that were just going to stoke people's interest in her. She wanted the readers to be involved in her pages.
Did she, her style of writing, I mean, did she speak to the, you know, because there can be a terrible habit of some people who write down to their readers. Yes,
she certainly didn't write down to her readers. She expected her readers to be informed and she expected her readers to be intelligent. And she also would use a lot of quotes and a lot of interviews from different people, but they really were A-listers. I mean, they were quotes from the movers and the shakers of the day, whether they were actors or captains of industry. Their inclusion would be based on their achievements, not the fact that they just, you know, turned up on a red carpet somewhere. I think everything she tackled, as I say, was written in the same style. It didn't matter it was fashion. Her pieces on fashion actually are very funny. They're very brisk. They're very... very informative, and if she didn't like something, she'd be very quick to point it out.
Talking about her pieces on fashion, on the front cover of Hold the Front Page, there's a picture of her looking absolutely gorgeous and stylish.
In a trouser suit
with a cigarette in one hand, dangling sort of languorously down, and then a drink on the bar, and she seems to be sort of like having an adoring group bunch of men around her. Is this a reflection of?
That was a picture. I think that was a picture post done by a very famous photographer at the time called Bert Hardy, and it was a piece on women who wear the trousers. And in fact, I was only told the other day that the name of the bar that was taken apparently was called Auntie's, and writers from the Daily Sketch would congregate there, I gather, which I didn't know. No one had ever told me the name of the pub before.
Right. And I mean, talking about moving in glamorous circles, there's also a picture of her doing perhaps one of the first pieces of photobombing of Princess Margaret.
Oh, I know. Loitering behind Princess Margaret and Tony Armstrong Jones, or Lord Snowden as he was then.
As he became.
Yes, it's a very funny picture, just seeing her sort of peering above.
But she became, again, one of the highest paid journalists in Fleet Street. And then later on, she became an expert witness. And this really sort of cut her teeth and underlined her reputation. Because she was the famous Lady Chatterley trial.
Yeah, she was brought in by the defence to defend Lady Chatterley's lover at the trial. In fact, I think she was brought in as an expert on women's affairs, but the prosecution had decided they would treat her as an expert witness on literary matters. But she wasn't there for very long, but I think she made her point. And they say she came in dressed as though she was from the pages of Vogue. I think there was a sort of intake of breath as she walked into the room.
Right.
She was a very tall woman, and I think all this contributed to her success on Fleet Street. You know, she was tall, she was beautiful, she was clever. It was this fatal combination. Also, she's a bloody good writer.
I mean, how did the rest of the male-dominated press take regard to her? Presumably, it was not wise to underestimate her then.
Never underestimate my mother. I don't think anyone would say that. I mean, she made strong men quail. But again, I think often to do with her height. She was 6 foot. You know, she was sort of quite an imposing person. And she knew how to be just as incisive when she spoke to somebody as she was in print. But they took to her. The only people who didn't take to her initially was the print union, as she was not allowed to go down on the stone in her days on the Daily Mail, which is where, in the early days, the print was actually set up in little type squares, and the journalists would go down in the evening and read their copy. And Mother was a woman, and it was considered not to be de rigueur or unlucky to have a woman on the stone. It took her years to be actually allowed down there as a sort of token gesture. I think they let her down one night and shook her hand, and that was sort of it.
Good.
So men, the printers didn't like her, but the other journalists did.
It's fascinating. I was doing a talk the other week about media, and I just was talking about when I wrote with the Daily Mirror and Holborn Circus, and you know the stone guys, the hot metal guys, and he had the printers beneath them, actually in the same building. That world has gone completely. Do you think that she would be able to hold her own in this Instagram social media celebrity chit chat?
I was thinking about that only the other day, whether she would have been a good tweeter or not. And I think she probably, because of, you know, this ability to be able to, you know, cut to the chase in very few words, might have been extremely good at it. Sadly, obviously, she died before practically, she never got to grips with computers even, so she was very sad about that. I remember her being riveted to hear her name appeared up in Google in the initial searches when it first came all started setting off. But I think she would have been rather good. Instagram might not have appealed, but she'd have been a very good tweeter.
But she had this classic look, so Instagram would have been an absolute godsend for her, I would have thought.
It would have been a godsend, but she didn't like... She never really exploited her looks in that way. She just accepted them. She knew that she knew she was beautiful. She accepted that, and she had a lot of men who pursued her in lots of many ways, but she didn't actually pay much attention on a daily basis. She would have hated selfies. I mean, that would have driven her to distraction, I can tell you.
I mean, she
didn't want all the time just to think about yourself. This would have been something she thought was appalling. She wanted, you know, especially where you want to be considered. And not just how you looked.
And there were adoring men in her life, one of whom, obviously...
Yeah, there were a lot of adoring men, yeah.
One of whom was your father, and there must have been an interesting one to write about that.
It is interesting to write about that, but I think I call her Anne a lot during the book, because if I called her Mother all the way through, it becomes much more personal. And I was also very aware that the book was not about me, it's about her, and otherwise what's the point of writing it, really? So I very much concentrated on her, and tried, and every time I thought I was bringing me in too much or becoming a bit whingy, as children are inclined to be, I would slap myself on the wrist and go, no, it's about her. So I called her Anne, which made it easier.
And of
it
course,
removes you, gives you a sort of removal from the immediate action.
And also, of course, I mean, we think about her metropolitan writing and being involved in Fleet Street and, you know, ducking in and out of society parties. But there was, didn't you say that she never actually owned a house? She rented in London, and then, but the cottage in the country. Explain how she, a love of gardening, which you think would be the complete antithesis of a metropolitan socialite type of writing.
It is, but her mother was very interested in gardening, and they used to have a little front... She was brought up in London, and they had a little front plot, and she and her mother would go and do the little front plot together. And also they would have holidays in the countryside, and that's when her interest in wildflowers started, and her whole interest in gardening. But she... And the cottage, which she actually got... She borrowed a loan of £500 to buy the cottage... when she just left university, and it was a cottage that was very important to her. It was central to her life. I'd rented places in London, came and went, but the cottage was the place that she would always retreat to in times of hardship or when she needed just solace, really. She went to the cottage and loved the garden. It was a pretty hickledy-pickledy cottage garden, but she loved it, and it kick-started her, you know, her love of gardening. But not her writing career. That didn't, in gardening, that started later on when she married my stepfather, Osbert Lancaster, because... She didn't think she could make a career out of gardening writing, which she could out of journalism, but she was very relieved, I think, to be able to make a complete career change and start to write about gardening.
And what was it like, you know, yourself in the family atmosphere with academics and writers? There's a picture of, is it John Betjeman and you
yes,
on a park
right,
bench?
Yeah. Yes, yes, that park bench, that's your mind, that's our garden bench.
Sorry.
We're all playing a game of croquet.
My apologies, I just glanced.
I'm keeping score, actually, in the back.
And also, I mean, that must have been a fascinating atmosphere. And also, is a cartoon of you in Italy in the 60s?
There is a cartoon of me in Italy wearing my Bieber dress and surrounded by various people looking either askance at my legs or cheering at the age of 14 or 15, I think I was then. And yes, it was extraordinary growing up with these people because I didn't. My stepfather was very, very social. My mother, not so much. But he had a sort of coterie of friends: John Piper, John Betjeman, Moran Kaplan. I mean, people who were the movers and shakers. He knew everybody at Shields, but there's no one he didn't know. And they would all come round. And I think it was, in many ways, it just you looked on in awe as a young teenager because you realised that these were people who were extraordinary. There was no doubt about it. They were funny, they were witty, they were clever. You know, they never looked down on teenagers, which, you know, is very easy to do.
Yeah.
They were never kind of rude or dismissive. You were treated as one of the group.
Which was
one way daunting, another way very cheery.
Yeah. What's it? I mean, you've forayed into journalism yourself. I mean, it's a difficult enough business as is to get in. It must have been quite daunting being the daughter of Anne Scott James as you sat down for your first assignment.
Well, in fact, I didn't really go into journalism at all. I did start off. I went and worked at Harper's and Queen magazine when I began,
yeah,
and went into fashion. And then by a sort of process, I became a stylist and a costume designer, which I did for 30 years. I didn't write at all. And it was a conscious choice because my brother is a writer, my mother's a writer, my father was a writer, my stepfather. You know, I didn't really want to go into all of that. The competition, it was just all too much. I thought I'd plough my own furrow and do my own thing. And then there came this moment when I started writing, and now, of course, I can't stop. But that's fine too. It's one of the things, a bit like growing up with the family of a doctor or a dentist or an engineer. You sort of know you can do it if you have to.
Right, right.
So, but I didn't sort of, didn't. I really didn't want to compete. They were very, you know, they're very successful people, all my family, in their own way. And there comes a point, it was much easier to be just the sort of soother of emotions rather than add another sort of level to it all.
So you
if
said,
that makes sense.
Yeah, and just, yes, absolutely. So you've said that you didn't want to be a writer, you don't really write, but you have. So why did you decide the time was right to write, hold the front page?
Why did I say it? Because I'd started getting letters from people across the world who wanted to find out. I think an interest in picture posts has resurfaced over the last few years. People interested in nostalgia and interested in the war. And I started getting these letters. Everyone asked me about who Anne Scott James was. And I thought, well, goodness, you know, here I am supplying them information. When I have her archive here, she's very keen on, you know, all her articles I've got pasted into books rather neatly and handily. And I thought, I'm the person who's lived with her. I'm the person who has observed her my whole life. So I might as well be the one to offer an opinion on her. So I have.
So you have. And what's it like then revisiting the columns? Or did you read the columns when they came out?
I have indeed. I hadn't read the columns very much beforehand. They were just the archive and they kept there. And I very rarely started looking at them. But then I started reading the Sunday Express, which, and I have to say again, the Express was such a big paper at the time. I mean, everyone thinks of the Express now and they kind of, oh, the Express. But it was the paper of choice, was the Express. So I started with these articles and I just thought, but they're terribly good. You could put them into a newspaper today, change a couple of names, and honestly, people would just think what a jolly article that was. They would be hard-pressed to notice the difference. And so that's why I thought it was worth putting her articles back into columns. And then I put them into groups, and I put my opinion on what she thought about beauty, what she thought about religion, what she thought about men, and then tried to tie them in with her columns on that particular subject.
And I mean, what influence do you think that she has or has on modern? Because I mean, there seem to be columnists everywhere. Everybody's got an opinion, but having an opinion and being a successful column writer are two entirely different things.
Well, she very much thought that, as I said a bit earlier, that, you know, the ego of the writer was not important. It was really not. The readership was all, and you shouldn't write about your own personal problems, which I think a lot of women writers do today, until you're sort of bored reading about them, about their journeys through this, that, and the other. And she didn't do that. So I think that would be very nice if they learned that a bit more. Also, they're not allowed now really to cross-pollinate between topics, which she was allowed to do. She could write on anything she liked, any length she liked, and it's an extraordinary freedom. I mean, now if you're writing about gardening, you write about gardening. If you're writing about, you know, fashion, you write about fashion. You're not allowed to do the same cross-pollination.
What do you hope that people will take from your book, Hold the Front Page?
What do I hope they'll take? I hope that they will look at these articles and think that they were written in 1953, and yet how extraordinarily modern that they are. She writes about topics from plastic surgery to interior decorating to politics, and I just hope people read it and think, yes, she was an extraordinary journalist. So I'd like them to take that away from her, out of it. And what that a groundbreak, you know, that women were groundbreakers in 1953.
The book is called Hold the Front Page, The Wit and Wisdom of Anne Scott James. It's by Claire Hastings. It's out on the 31st of March on Pimpernel Press. Claire, if people want to find out more information about you or about the book, is there? Do you have a web page? Do you do the social media thing?
I do. I have clairehastings.com. Lucky them.
And they can find out all the wit and wisdom of Claire Hastings. Any plans to do...
Hopefully I'll be updating that later on this week.
Any plans to do a follow-up book or anything? What's next in your sights?
Oh,
apart
a follow-up
from...
book. Well, in fact, I'm writing a novel. I have written a novel earlier on, and I'm nearly finished writing a modern novel. I've been told it's called Uplit, which is its genre, which is, I think, probably what we all need at the moment. So I might get a bit of a pace on and try and finish it quickly.
Well, I think we've all got to have a little time to get to work on that project over the next couple of weeks, put it that way, Claire.
I know, the next couple of months.
The book is called Hold the Front Page, The Wit and Considerable Wisdom of Anne Scott James. It's by Claire Hastings. It's out soon on the 31st of March with Pimpernel Press. Claire, thank you so much for your time
today. Thank you, Giles, and keep safe.
We will try to. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.